Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. This is KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, we hope you stay glued to kptz.org. Our website's more than just a way to listen to today's shows. For example, you can find the biographies of all of our hosts and DJs. You can look up calendar listings to see what's happening around town. You can even sample some of our earlier shows. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as a podcast. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as some earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who are those hardcore bridge players at the community center every Friday afternoon? It looks like serious cutthroat competition. And who is that nice woman at Pandamori who saw how disappointed I was they'd run out of their olive bread, the one that's only made on Saturday? She slipped out to the shop's outside stand at the farmer's market, grabbed one, brought it in and cut it. Come to think of it, I've never figured out why Pandamori has two locations steps away from each other on the farmer's market Saturdays. Anyhow, just another quirk in quirky Port Townsend. And one of my all-time favorite quirky characters is the guy who blissfully rides his motorized skateboard up Sims Way to QFC. Tourists coming into town driving down the hill must be slack jaws watching him ride up, perfectly balanced. Just who is he, anyhow? Give me a call, whoever you are. Jefferson County is full of all sorts of fascinating characters. This show, Our Town, tries to profile some of the singular personalities who live here, but the show's only a half hour long, which is definitely not long enough to do justice to some of our fellow citizens. So it's a synopsis. We try to talk about their lives, their dreams, how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Today, my guest is Mike Howell, who's the owner of Howell's Sandwich Shop, tucked back in the space where Giordacci's was once located. So welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start at the beginning. Are you a local boy, born and bred in Port Townsend?
I am not. I've lived here for 2 years now. I'm originally from the south side of Chicago.
South side of Chicago. That's the subject of many TV shows, I think.
Well, yeah, actually quite a bit has been going on with television there in the last few years due to a lot of the tax breaks and things that the local governments have been giving to a lot of the television stations and things like that.
Okay. Is your family there for many generations?
Yeah. One side was a lot of Dutch farmers from the outskirts of Chicago, and then they kind of worked their way in.
I see. What sort of business were your parents in?
My mom worked for a lot of industries along the southeast side of Chicago. Ford plants is really where a lot of my family has worked in. My grandfather owned a small airport business outside of Chicago. Things like that, kind of grassroots type stuff.
Okay. And are you an only child or do you have brothers and sisters?
No, I have quite the extended family, as the day and age calls for. I have a couple half-brothers and some step-siblings and people I call brothers and sisters.
So where do you fit in the hierarchy? Are you the oldest, the youngest, or somewhere in between?
Somewhere in between with less of a Marsha standard.
Okay. And high school. I always like to ask people about high school because a lot of kids get labeled in high school. You know, he's a jock, she's a nerd, this guy's a band geek, whatever. What do you think your peers would have pigeonholed you as?
I kind of floated between a few different groups, but probably somewhere along the nerd lines, I'd have to guess.
Okay. And were you a kid who really had it together and knew, I want to be X when I grow up?
Not really. The plans have changed a few times over the years, but I always kind of had a general idea of a lot of the things that I was really into, which helped drive my career in a lot of ways.
So, like what?
Oh, just, you know, hospitality industry type things, people, food, booze, all sorts of things that kind of go along with just kind of a social lifestyle.
So you are always a pretty gregarious kind of guy.
Yeah, I've been told to shut my mouth once or twice.
Okay. And after high school, did you go to college?
I did go to college at the forceful nature of my grandparents, but I'm really glad I did.
And where'd you go?
I attended a few years at Missouri State down in Springfield, Missouri. Then I finished at Roosevelt University in Chicago.
Okay. Yeah. And did you work some part-time jobs when you were in school?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. The vast majority were definitely food and beverage driven, though. Started off as a dish boy in an Italian restaurant and worked my way up to the grill. And from there, just worked at a few different restaurants and bars and things like that throughout my college career.
Gathering experience as you went along.
Experiments was one thing. Experience is another. Yeah. A lot of different things kind of fell into place throughout those years. And you learn a lot about yourself and the world and...
Right. You know. And when you were finally done and ready for a full-time job, what'd you do then?
Well, the idea was to be a teacher.
Okay.
And when graduation day rolled around, I was working for a bar on the north side of Chicago, and I had a really great gig, and they had instilled quite a bit of trust in such a young man at that point, and it was the first steps, really, in my career as far as restaurants and bars and things like that. And it was kind of, you know...
There you were.
Have a lot of fun and make some money or go work really, really hard on the south side of Chicago and have a lot less fun. So it kind of...
Seemed like the way to go.
Yeah, it was kind of hard to talk me out of it at that point.
Yeah. Well, and I imagine you made pretty good tips, which might have helped with... You might have had a student loan or two.
Yes, that was definitely a big bonus and definitely helped in paying off my student loans, which... Going into your 30s is kind of nice not having to worry about.
Yeah, I hear about so many people who are stuck with loans forever and ever.
It's scary out there for a lot of people, I think. Not too many people are really paying attention to my age range's serious dilemma with student loans and things like
that. Right. It really is impacting a whole generation, I think.
Yep.
What was the name of the place that you were... The bartender at or working at?
At that time, I worked for, I was at a sandwich shop, and then I worked for a bar across the street called Jake's Pub.
Jake's Pub.
Yeah.
Okay, is it still in existence?
They're still in existence, yes. It's they're one of the first bars in Chicago to get their liquor license, actually, so they'll be around forever. It's a Chicago stronghold.
Tradition.
Yeah.
Tradition strong. So how long were you there?
I was there for just about 5 years, and from there I went on to work at a couple other really notable places in the city of Chicago. Fountainhead, for one, really known for their expansive spirits menu, as well as their beer menus and outstanding farm-to-table foods. From there, Headquarters Beercade was where I actually met my future wife and started working a really, really high-class, high-flowing craft beer program there for both of their locations and really got into events and things like that. And that was where I was before we decided to move out here to Port Townsend.
Well, I've always wondered this. In some establishments, they have very exotic mixed drinks with all sorts of ingredients and sometimes flames and stuff like that. Do they teach you that or do people learn it on their own? How does that come about?
You know, it's kind of a two-way thing with that. One, you have to have a desire to learn those kind of things. But another thing is some places teach you those as well. And a lot of things you pick up throughout your career. So there's certain amounts of flair that go with every bar that may be skewed one way or another. As far as a lot of dive bars on the south side of Chicago might not necessarily want flaming umbrella drinks, but...
True.
You know, it might work in a couple other places.
Yeah, I can see that. Now, you're mentioning craft beers, which in the past, I don't know, 10 years, let's say, have become immensely popular. Do establishments that focus on craft beer in general do as well financially as those who are, you know, more diversified?
Well, craft beer is kind of its own monster in a way. It's growing at such a rapid rate that... It's getting to the point where it's almost treacherous for the craft beer community in itself because there's a lot out there. But as far as revenue for a small business, yes, it is important to maintain a good beer list. We have a lot of people in this area that have a lot of brand loyalty to things that sell better than others just purely by looking at it on paper.
The brand. Yeah.
You know?
So you say it can be treacherous. What do you mean in terms of competition?
Well, it's starting to show in a few other places now, but I've had a theory for years that I've kind of called the craft beer tidal wave or craft beer storm, where basically right now the market is just flooded. There's a lot of people out there who figured out how to brew beer, some of them really, really well, but their sole goal in life was to sell packaged goods to a larger distributor through the three-tier system and make a living that way. But now there's so many choices that there's kind of a pushback now, I think, from a lot of on-premise people because they can't have 100 different IPAs sitting on the shelf at any given time or anything like that. So eventually what I think you'll see in the craft beer market is just a pullback a lot. Only the people that really had their roots in tight will be the ones left standing throughout it. You know, I think we're going to see brewing equipment get a lot cheaper over the next 5 to 10 years. But luckily, in this town, all of our brew pubs and things like that are really awesome in the sense that they're very community focused and centralized. So I don't think the Pacific Northwest, especially our area, will experience as much as the problems of, say, the Midwest. Or
okay. Now, you used a term earlier that I'm not all that familiar with the three-tier. What does that mean?
That's basically just the agreement for bars and restaurants to go through a distributor. So what the distributor does is, step one, buys the beer from X brewery, goes to them, taxed. We buy it from them, taxed. We sell it, taxed. Three-tier system.
Ah, gotcha, gotcha.
It's their way of keeping a hold on things.
Yeah, and I totally understand what you're saying. No one establishment or very few establishments could have 150 different kinds of beer on hand. Yeah. I mean, your overhead would be incredible. It just is not viable. What do you think's an optimum number?
You know, on my last 5 or 6 rotated beer lists over the last few years, I've tried to keep it in the 30 range, 30 to 40.
That's a lot, even so.
Yeah, even so. But you also want to show a vast scope of different styles and breweries and parts of the country.
Right.
You know, there are different flavor profiles just like anywhere. The oysters might taste different in the East Coast as they do here on the West Coast. Just certain things for your palate to really enjoy.
Okay. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. The show's called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Our Town profiles some of the fascinating people who make up the fabric of the community around here. Today, my guest is Mike Howell, owner of Howell Sandwiches in Port Townsend. He's a Chicago boy, and very soon he's going to tell me how he ended up out here on the West Coast. So what's the story? How did you end up in the West and particularly in Port Townsend?
Well, just like any good story, chasing a woman.
Yeah.
As I had mentioned earlier, I had met my wife working for a hospitality management company in Chicago, and it was 2 a.m. I'm wrapping up shop. I'm knee deep in receipts and money and closing down shop, and she called me and said, hey, I have a friend that needs some help working with horses out in Washington. Well, I think I want to do it. And I had been working in the bar industry for quite a chunk of time at that point, and it can be a bit of a brutal lifestyle if you don't maintain it well. So I figured we're still in our 20s and can make the jump, and if worst comes to worst, can always tuck tail and run back.
Go,
you know?
Home, yeah.
So we basically quit our jobs, and within 2 weeks, we're moving out here.
Well, how did you do it? Did you rent a U-Haul? And
we loaded down an old Ford Ranger that I borrowed from my dad, and then my wife's father came along and packed up both cars as much as we could, and then we also discovered that driving across the country in the middle of the fall is a terrible idea. So after a couple of ice storms and several cups of coffee later, we finally made it to Port Townsend. And we rolled in. It was dark. And
dark and stormy night.
Dark and stormy night. And we had no idea there was a paper mill in town. and the certain fumes that it gives off. So we're driving through town and had no idea what was going on. So we were just, it was kind of a comical thing. But within a month, we knew we were never leaving.
So you just sort of randomly found Port Townsend?
No, she had a connection from a gal that she was on the equestrian team with at Baylor.
I see.
And it kind of just...
gelled.
Just some things just happen, you know?
And did you have any problems finding a place to rent?
Well, we had to kind of move out here blind. Mm-hmm. So the place we had rented, we never got to see, but we lucked out. And it was right on Discovery Bay, like,
wow,
overlooking the mountains. Just complete roll of the dice luck on that one.
That must have been an amazing surprise.
We weren't upset about it when the clouds cleared and the sun came out. I was like, oh,
hey, look at this.
All right, we can do this.
Were you living in sort of a typical Chicago high-rise back there at that point?
No, I had never really lived in high-rises before, really close houses and tight apartments, you okay. know, things like that, kind of Chicago bungalows and three flats. The high-rises were never kind of my thing.
But you never had a view like Discovery Bay.
No, no, not. I had spent some time in northern Arkansas as a kid with my grandparents, and there's a pretty close competition there, but I have to say the Olympics probably beat it.
Okay, so when you moved out here, she had a job, right?
Yeah.
And now that's good.
Yeah, hey, one of us needed one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I talk to so many people, and that's a big issue. Where are the jobs? There aren't all that many. So you obviously had to think about this. So what was your idea?
Kind of just with my resume and a lot of the things that I had accomplished in my beer director career as far as bartending and management and things like that, I felt like I had a good enough safety net to fall on at least serving a couple days a week at any place that would take me at that point.
Right.
I ended up doing some odd jobs at a couple barns and then eventually bartended at the Fireside in Port Ludlow for a few months until mm-hmm. I got the business rolling and we started doing the build out on the sandwich shop.
Well, it's pretty adventurous to be an entrepreneur and opt to have your own business, not work for someone else. So why'd you decide to do it?
No one says it better than Bob Belcher from Bob's Burgers. I don't like people telling me what to do, so I opened my own restaurant.
Yeah.
You know? But besides that, it had been something that I had worked for so long, and I knew it was the next eventual step in my career. And the location that we're in, I'd been in before, and I had a connection with it. So when I saw it was for rent, I jumped on it as fast as I could. And every day I wake up and there's that sound in your head that got to get stuff done. This has to work. Got rent to pay. Things like that. So it is scary. But if you have the drive for it and you understand that you have to be there and be a part of it, then it's your life.
All good restaurants, bars, whatever, have a personality. And I'd really like you to describe what you view as the personality of Howell's.
You know, the design base was kind of to go along with Port Townsend with kind of a nature feel, wood, green. But also, when I grew up, my favorite restaurants were the Italian restaurants with all the old pictures of people that had clearly passed away by then, but cigars in their mouth, on top of horses with bottles of wine, and, you know, just having a blast, and it would give you a feel. So I took pictures of multiple people in my family from vast scapes and a lot of things that when I walk in, I still get choked up looking at.
Yeah, and well, the number of the pictures have a big sign, a hangar, Howell's Airport.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
My great-grandfather started a flight instruction school in the 1930s, basically teaching guys basic flight skills. A lot of them went off to go blow up Nazis, stuff like that. Then it went into a small airport outside of Chicago and Cicero, if you're familiar with any mob lore, not too far off from that. Then in the late 80s, my grandfather closed that location and opened another one in a little further south of Chicago.
Okay, one of the pictures in there has a little boy about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years old in a little mock plane in front of it. Does that happen to be you?
The little red plane, yes.
Yes.
That is me, indeed.
Cool. Yeah. Whatever happened to the little red plane?
You know, I think that was that belonged to a friend of the family's, and they happened to stick me in it real quick while they were there one day.
Yeah, that's a cute picture. And so most of those pictures on the walls are all family of yours.
every picture except for three in the entire place is family.
Okay. Have you trained your staff, if people ask about it, to say that's so-and-so?
Well, you know, just by the looks on their faces when people ask me, I'm pretty sure they've heard it enough that they know the shtick. If somebody wants to know, you can kind of see them roll their eyes as I start bleeding into it. But there's some good stories behind a lot of the pictures.
I'm sure there are. So you're a small business owner now. How many employees do you have?
In the summertime at our peak season, we had about 6 to 7 employees. You know, turnover is a thing in our industry. At this juncture, we have about 4 or 5, one kind of part-time person.
So you opened last April, correct? So you went right into the summer season. How was the summer for you?
Definitely a learning experience. I had an idea of what I thought an awesome summer would be, and we blew the doors off of that. So that was a really nice way to start. But wow, does this place really, really take off in those last few months of the summer? It was a really good time.
Yeah. And now we're in the so-called off season.
Yeah.
There aren't all that many tourists coming in. I mean, there are some, obviously. So business slows down a bit. What are your current hours?
Right now we are 11 to 6, Tuesday through Sunday.
Yeah.
We have a lot of promotions rolling out for this part of the year as far as for locals and things like that, keep people coming outside. And
do you have any that you can talk about yet?
Yeah, absolutely. One of them that I really like is we're doing a Kellogg Collaboration Day. So we're within two other businesses in the Kellogg building, the Lively Olive and the Tea and Spice Exchange. Go mm-hmm. check them out if you haven't. Both really awesome places. Where if you bring in your coupon from there, we're going to give you 15% off just to kind of spur a little bit more commerce between all the places within the building.
That's cool. So how did you get word of mouth going when you were first opening? Because that place is tucked back sort of behind things. You have an awesome deck and everything, but you wouldn't necessarily know it's there. So what did you do to spread the word?
Well, first we had to kind of counter being called Giordini's in the beginning, because people thought we were just taking over Giordini's location. I don't think a lot of people realized there was a fish and chips place in between that. So trying to let people know we weren't Giordini's was one thing, but we did a lot of kind of guerrilla marketing in the beginning where we brought sandwiches to Jefferson County ER, the police department, the fire department, city hall. My wife brought some out to a couple local salons, and that really proved to be the really great thing, because man, once everybody started talking, it was phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, I must say, I you have wonderful sandwiches.
Well, I appreciate that.
In fact, last time I was there, I had a pastrami sandwich that was wonderful, and I know you use Pandamori bread.
Oh yeah.
And we decided to try to get some of that, but that's special order bread. You can
try and luck out and get a couple of their par-baked baguettes in the morning, but yeah, we right now bring in anywhere, depending on the day, 35 to 50 par-bakes, depending on any sort of catering or special event we might have going on.
Are you making a conscious effort to use local sources for stuff?
Absolutely, but it is hard for small businesses to get a lot of things we need because some things just aren't seasonal.
Right.
You know, and that's one thing that kind of holds you at bay when you try to do a lot of farm-to-table things. And there's a lot of people that do it very, very well. Finisterre, mm-hmm. up in Uptown, they knock it out of the park, as well as a couple others. But we do our best. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, you're right. It's hard in the wintertime to come up with local sources for everything.
Yeah.
One thing I'm curious about, and you almost touched on it earlier, is it hard to find good employees?
If we were to take the microphones downtown right now and walk down Water Street, I would say we'd probably count at least 10 help wanted signs.
Yeah, I think so.
It's not easy.
I would think so. Well, it's a problem all business owners have.
Yeah, we also live in a place that fosters being outside a lot and exploration, and it's hard to argue with those things, you know, when I have a 18-year-old kid telling me they want to take off for 3 months to go on a road trip with their friends across the country. I'm like, well, can I go with you?
Yeah, right.
You know? So we work in a community, but we also have to be real about the fact that we're also a tourist community in the summer.
Right.
So it just balancing, find good people, pay people well, treat people right.
Right.
Let them know they're appreciated, and the good ones hopefully will stick, and you just got to keep moving on.
All right. What do you see as your biggest challenge going forward?
Biggest challenge going forward. You know, when you first open, you have that kind of new kid on the block appeal.
Right.
Which is great. You know, it's awesome for sales. And then people get to know you, they get to know the place. And if you did it right, they come back for your quality and the customer service and things like that. And the biggest challenge is maintaining that same feeling that they got the first time they walk into your establishment. A lot of places lose touch with that over time, I think. And that's when you see, you know, you hear it all the time. Oh, man, this place used to be great. But the last couple of times we've gone, it's kind of, Yeah. So it's maintaining that. It's maintaining good community relationships and keeping your ear close to the ground and knowing what's going on and what the people around you need.
Right. Okay. Well, we're running really short on time here, but I'm curious about one thing. I know as a businessman, you're working 24/7 basically to keep the place going and exciting, but occasionally you must have a little time off. What do you like to do?
Oh my goodness. We live in such a great place to just be outdoors, even if you can put on your raincoat and look past that some days. So I've really gotten into fly fishing since I've been out here. A lot of hiking, just eating out a lot at a lot of local places, enjoying the area.
Okay. And I know you haven't really taken any time off so far, but you're pretty recently married. Are you going to go on a honeymoon?
Yes, we'll be closing up shop the second week of January for about 10 days so that we can turn off our phones, the staff can get a breather, and then we'll get back to business and get those damn good sandwiches back out.
Okay, well, I think you should definitely put up a sign saying gone honeymooning or something like that.
Yeah, people were pretty receptive to our getting married sign, so Right. Hopefully they're as receptive to our, you know, honeymoon sign. Right.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show, Mike.
Why, thank you.
You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today has been Mike Howell of Howell Sandwiches. Thank you again. I also want to thank my partner, John McPherson, the man in the glass booth, editor and producer of Our Town. He's the one who smooths out all the ahs, ers, and you knows. He makes me and my guests sound so much more eloquent than we really are. I also want to thank program director Larry Stein, board chair Robert Ambrose, and station manager Kate Ingram. All three work really hard to make KPTZ into an excellent community station. I want to thank you, the listener. As you know, KPTZ is an all-volunteer operation. We value you as a listener and perhaps as a volunteer. We also value your dollar contributions. Like many public stations, we need that money. We take no money from the government or anyone else except you, our loyal listeners. Thank you for listening. This show, Our Town, profiles some of the unique individuals who make Jefferson County the special place that it is. We're signing off for today, but keep listening to KPTZ for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.